Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. After a long period where Americans were having fewer heart attacks and strokes, the trend has significantly slowed down in recent years. Today we're going to read from a few different sources about this trend, ways to stay heart healthy and happy, what we should be asking our doctors to do, what tests we should tell them we don't need, and the good news, bad news portion, the changes we need to make to stay in good heart health. We're going to start with an article from Consumer Reports of April 6, 2017. This was written by Lauren F. Friedman and titled, Understanding the Stages of Heart Disease. Heart disease often starts quietly, progressing from high blood pressure to clogged coronary arteries with few obvious symptoms, but too often it ends with a bang, a heart attack. Here's how to understand each stage of heart disease so that you can work with your doctor to slow its progression, or better yet, even reverse it. High blood pressure. Your arteries, flexible and elastic in younger years, harden with age, a problem worsened by too much body weight, not being active enough, and smoking, among other things. In those circumstances, blood pressure starts to rise, straining your heart to push blood through your vessels with increased force. Over time, that can damage the vessel walls, creating perfect places for cholesterol in your blood to lodge. Atherosclerosis. A mix of high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and other risk factors can cause cholesterol to build up into plaque deposits, constraining blood flow to the heart. That's atherosclerosis or clogged coronary arteries. Angina. For some people, the narrowing of the coronary arteries causes chest pain when they exert themselves. That pain is known as angina. Heart attack. People with angina are almost lucky. Angina is the pain that signals something is wrong before a person has a heart attack. But most patients don't have any warnings. Heart attacks usually happen when a plaque ruptures, causing a blood clot to form and block an artery feeding the heart. When a clot blocks blood to the brain, that's a stroke. Aortic valve disease. Aging combined with high blood pressure, diabetes, and other risk factors can also damage the heart's valves, or the flaps that open and close to synchronize blood flow through the organ. That can prevent a valve from fully opening or closing, limiting the flow of blood out of the heart or allowing blood to leak back in. Over time, that can cause chest pain or tightness, shortness of breath, fainting or dizziness, or fatigue. Heart failure. High blood pressure, atherosclerosis, valve disease, and heart attacks, alone or combined with diabetes, thyroid disorders, and other conditions, can eventually weaken your heart, making it harder for it to pump blood through the body. That's called heart failure, and it can lead to shortness of breath, fatigue, and swelling in the legs, neck, and abdomen. Also from Consumer Reports of April 6, 2017, this was not attributed to anyone in particular as the writer, but it is titled How Heart Attacks in Women and Men Are Different. The number one killer of men and women in the U.S. continues to be heart disease, but the most obvious expression of the disease, a heart attack, tends to strike women differently. For one thing, these attacks tend to occur later in a woman's life. On average, women have their first heart attack at age 72, compared with 65 for men. Heart attacks in women are deadlier, too. 26% of women 45 and older die in the year after their first heart attack, compared with 19% of men, according to the American Heart Association, AHA. To make matters worse, symptoms of the attacks are usually less obvious and more difficult to detect in women. That's why it's so important that everyone be aware of these key differences. Heart attacks in women often have more subtle signs, such as jaw or back pain, nausea, and shortness of breath, according to the AAJ, rather than the classic symptoms of a feeling of pain or squeezing in the chest or pain radiating to one or both arms. As a result, women may be less likely to seek medical help than men are and more likely to be misdiagnosed in the emergency room. When a heart attack is suspected, one of the first tests your doctor might want to perform is an angiogram, which checks for blocked or narrowed coronary arteries. But that test may miss a type of heart disease more common in women, coronary microvascular disease, which damages smaller arteries in the heart, according to research from the National Institutes of Health. In addition, plaque tends to be spread more evenly through women's arteries, making it harder to see in a standard angiogram. So when that test is normal in a woman suspected of having had a heart attack, the doctor should consider performing an intravascular ultrasound to look inside the arteries in more detail, says Suzanne Steinbaum, D.O., director of Women's Heart Health at Northwell Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City. Anyone who has had a heart attack should be prescribed medications to protect the heart, such as low-dose aspirin, as well as blood pressure and cholesterol-lowering drugs, and be referred to an exercise and a cardiac rehabilitation program. But research shows women are less likely than men to get referred to these programs or to go when referred, Steinbaum says. Now we turn to the New York Times, an article written by Jane E. Brody and published on August 1, 2016, Rediscovering the Kitchen and Other Tips for Heart Health. First, the bad news. After decades of major progress in reducing deaths from diseases of the heart and blood vessels, the decline in cardiovascular mortality has slowed significantly, according to the latest report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The researchers called their findings alarming, suggesting that cardiovascular benefits from medical interventions may have reached a saturation point and that further improvements depend largely on changes in society and personal behavior. The new data published in June in JAMA Cardiology covered the years from 2000 through 2014. From 2000 through 2010, the annual rates of decline for all cardiovascular deaths, heart diseases, and stroke averaged 3.69% for men and 3.98% for women. But since 2011, the rates of decline dropped to a mere 0.23% for men and 1.17% for women. These findings point to near stagnation in controlling cardiovascular diseases and deaths, Dr. Stephen Sidney and colleagues wrote. And they noted the reasons are not difficult to discern. Based on data from the latest National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey in 2011-12, Americans did better in controlling three major risk factors, smoking, high blood pressure, and elevated cholesterol, often with the help of medication. But many more people became obese and developed type 2 diabetes. According to data from the survey, the prevalence of adult obesity rose from 22.9% in 1988 through 1994 to 34.9% in 2011-12. And the CDC found that the prevalence of diabetes nearly tripled from 2.5% in 1990 to 7.2% in 2013. Furthermore, the national survey showed the percentage of adults who in 2012 were consuming an ideal diet that could minimize life-threatening damage to blood vessels was near zero. It's not that these grim data were unexpected. 4 years ago, Dr. Richard J. Jackson, a professor and former chairman of Environmental Health Sciences at the University of California, Los Angeles, predicted that the current generation of young Americans, those born since 1980, may be the first to live shorter lives than their parents. Even earlier, in 2007, Dr. Earl S. Ford of the CDC and Dr. Simon Capewell of the University of Liverpool wrote that unless measures were taken to transform the aberrant risk factor profile that currently characterizes much of the U.S. population and dangerous trends were reversed, mortality rates among younger adults may represent the leading edge of a brewing storm. Now for the good news. Neither medical innovations nor genetic interventions are needed to turn the tide on cardiovascular diseases and deaths and restore their once significant declines. And the very same changes needed to improve cardiovascular health may also help prevent many common cancers, diabetes, arthritis, cognitive decline, depression, and osteoporosis. Dr. Donald M. Lloyd-Jones, a chief architect of a 2010 strategic plan to improve cardiovascular health, said, "The whole may be greater than the sum of the parts. We shouldn't assume that chronic diseases automatically occur with aging. Living healthfully until we die is an achievable goal." Dr. Lloyd-Jones, a cardiologist and preventive medicine specialist at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago, chaired an American Heart Association committee of experts that adopted the recommended changes. "Instead of focusing on the negative, the plan aims to achieve ideal cardiovascular health through ideal health behaviors and ideal health factors." Here's how the committee defined ideal. No smoking, maintaining a body mass index below 25, being physically active, following current dietary guidelines, and maintaining an untreated total cholesterol level of less than 200 milligrams, an untreated blood pressure level of less than 120 over 80, and a fasting blood glucose level of less than 100 milligrams. The committee had hoped that fostering these seven health behaviors and targets would, by 2020, improve the cardiovascular health of all Americans by 20%, while reducing deaths from cardiovascular diseases and stroke by 20%. But current trends project at best a 6% improvement. Although most of us are born with the potential for ideal cardiovascular health, fewer than half of all adolescents have retained five or more of the seven behaviors and factors at ideal levels, Dr. Lloyd-Jones wrote in 2014. And things get progressively worse with age, until ideal cardiovascular health becomes rare above age 60, he said. Still, he has not given up hope for a better result. Now for the details. First and foremost, quit smoking or never start. Heart risks drop significantly within a year of quitting and eventually reach those of a non-smoker. Next, get regular physical exercise, at least 150 minutes a week of moderate physical activity or 75 minutes a week of vigorous activity or a combination of the two. Keep in mind that this is the minimum amount of physical activity needed to glean health benefits. More is better. Exercise should be part of your daily routine, like brushing your teeth. I do a combination of moderate and vigorous exercise every day. It energizes me and helps me control my weight without having to watch every calorie. As for diet, the committee recommended focusing on foods, not nutrients. As Dr. Lloyd-Jones put it, we don't eat nutrients. It refrained from suggesting how many calories people should eat, since caloric needs vary tremendously based on an individual's basal metabolic rate, body size, lean body mass, and physical activity. Rather, it suggested a version of the DASH diet, for dietary approaches to stop hypertension, that was successfully tested by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. It calls for 4.5 or more cups of fruits and vegetables a day, 2 or more 3.5-ounce servings of fish each week, 3 ounces of fiber-rich whole grains a day, at most 36 ounces of sugar-sweetened drinks, less than 450 calories or the equivalent in other sweets a week, 4 or more weekly servings of nuts, legumes, and seeds, and no more than 2 servings a week of processed meats. At the same time, limit saturated fats to less than 7% of total calories and daily sodium to 1,500 milligrams for people with high blood pressure and no more than 2,300 milligrams or 1 teaspoon of salt for everyone else. Currently, Americans consume an average of 3,500 milligrams of sodium a day, most of it from processed and restaurant foods. Which brings me to a final recommendation of my own. Rediscover your kitchen. No matter how busy you are, finding time to prepare healthy foods for yourself and your family should be a top priority. This is also written by Jane E. Brody for the New York Times Personal Health column. This was published April 10th, 2017, and is titled Learning from Our Parents' Heart Health Mistakes. Narrowed aging blood vessels, which put most older American adults at risk for heart disease and strokes, are not inevitable. This fact was underscored by a newly published study of a population in the Bolivian Amazon. Among these indigenous South Americans, known as the Chimane, coronary atherosclerosis was found to be one-fifth as common than in the United States. CT scans of the hearts of 705 Chimane adults aged 40 to 94 revealed that nearly 9 in 10 had clean coronary arteries and faced no risk of heart disease. The research team estimated that an 80-year-old in the Chimane group has the same vascular age as an American in his mid-50s. I'll return to the likely reasons and the life-saving lessons we can all learn from them, even now, after a discussion of a half-century of improvement in the heart health of Americans. In the early 1960s, when I began writing about science and health, American hearts were in dismal condition. Heart disease, an uncommon cause of death at the turn of the 20th century, had become the most common cause of death by mid-century. Coronary mortality peaked in 1968, when it was not unusual for Americans to die of a heart attack in their 50s or 60s. At the time, about 40% of adults smoked. Doctors deemed a cholesterol level of 240 milligrams per deciliter to be normal, and nearly half of young adults had blood pressure readings now considered high. Had the coronary death rate continued its meteoric rise, today more than 1.7 million Americans would succumb to heart disease each year. Instead, there's been a significant decline to some 425,000 deaths a year, with a commensurate increase in longevity of 8.7 years between 1970 and 2010. More than 70% of the rise in life expectancy is attributable to fewer deaths from cardiovascular disease, primarily heart attacks and strokes. The countless millions who have escaped a premature cardiovascular death can thank, in part, a half century of public health measures and other preventive medicine initiatives that are now threatened by proposed cuts in the nation's budget. The fall in cigarette smoking alone had a major impact, having declined to about 15% of adults. Alas, teenagers, whose smoking rates were once well below those of adults, have all but caught up. Smoking by itself increases the risk of heart disease. It raises blood pressure, diminishes exercise tolerance, decreases protective HDL cholesterol, and increases the blood's tendency to clot. But when smoking is combined with other coronary risk factors like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity, or type 2 diabetes, the risks of a heart attack, stroke, and an early coronary death are greatly increased. A decline in average blood levels of cholesterol also played an important role in the drop of coronary deaths. Today, only about 12% of American adults have high total cholesterol levels, 240 milligrams or greater, although nearly a third still have elevated levels, 130 milligrams or more, of artery-damaging LDL cholesterol. People with high total cholesterol face nearly twice the risk for heart disease as those with ideal levels, 200 milligrams or less, and a high level of LDL cholesterol, above 100 milligrams, is even more problematic. Yet, even now, fewer than half of adults with elevated LDL levels are being treated to reduce it. Recognizing and treating high blood pressure, based on the findings of a slew of studies of promising medications, has helped to save the hearts and lives of countless Americans who might otherwise have succumbed to coronary disease since its peak incidence. Nonetheless, today one adult in three has high blood pressure, and of those, only half have it under control. Another third of adults have blood pressure that is higher than normal, though not yet in the high blood pressure range. Thus, poor treatment remains a serious contributor to cardiovascular disease and deaths. Too often, the American approach to heart disease amounts to shutting the barn door after the horse has escaped. Once in trouble with life-threatening arterial damage, patients are usually treated with stents in hopes of keeping the vessels from closing down, at a cost of $30,000 to $50,000 for each procedure. But while having a stent in place can indeed be helpful for those in the throes of a heart attack, at least 8 randomized clinical trials found that for people with stable coronary artery disease, they offer no benefit over standard non-invasive medical treatment, diet, exercise, and perhaps treatment with an inexpensive statin. Yet more than half of stable coronary patients who may have symptoms like chest pain during vigorous exercise are treated with stents before they've tried conservative therapy. So what can we learn from the CHIMENE? Are medications, treatment with stents, and other costly procedures our only hope for cutting coronary mortality further? Yes, if millions of Americans continue to spurn changes in their living habits that have been shown over and over again to be protective. The CHIMENE have a forager, horticulturalist lifestyle. CHIMENE men are physically active for an average of 6 to 7 hours a day, accumulating about 17,000 steps a day, and CHIMENE women are active for 4 to 6 hours a day, walking about 15,000 steps a day. Smoking is rare in this population. The CHIMENE diet derives 72% of its calories from carbohydrates, though not the overly refined starches and sugars consumed by most Americans. The CHIMENE eat unprocessed complex carbs high in fiber, like brown rice, plantain, manioc, corn, nuts, and fruits. But the CHIMENE are not vegetarians. Protein accounts for 14% of their calories and comes primarily from animal meats that, unlike American meats, are very low in artery-clogging saturated fat. This does not mean we must return to hunting and gathering or subsistence farming to protect our hearts, but we'd do well to adapt the CHIMENE example and modify our modern high-fat, highly processed, low-fiber, and high-sugar diet and our extremely sedentary lifestyle. Most Americans today are nearly or completely inactive. Barely 20% of adults get the recommended minimum of 30 minutes a day of physical activity, and fewer than half of adults get enough activity to achieve any meaningful health benefits. In fact, a new study by researchers at Columbia University Medical Center found that only 16% of heart attack survivors get enough activity following hospital discharge. In the first 2 weeks, at least 30 minutes a day of moderate aerobic exercise, like brisk walking, at least 5 days a week, is recommended. We go back now to Consumer Reports, written by David Ansley, and this was published on April 6, 2017, titled, "The Dangers of Too Many Heart Tests." People might be surprised by what's not included in the checkup that family medicine physician Lynn Oliver, MD, provides her healthy patients. No EKG, no stress test, no 3D CT scan. Instead, just a standard blood pressure check and a simple blood work to determine cholesterol, and sometimes blood sugar levels too. While those fancier tests can be life-saving if you're experiencing chest pains or are at high risk of heart disease, using them in people without symptoms is often looking for trouble, she explains. Unnecessary testing is not just a waste of time and money, but also can cause harm, says Roger Chu, MD, a professor at the School of Medicine at Oregon Health and Science University. That often comes from false alarms that can trigger needless anxiety and a cascade of costly, sometimes risky procedures. These practices are discouraged by a number of the medical specialty societies participating in the Choosing Wisely campaign, which aims to identify what really works and what doesn't in medical care. Here are heart tests sometimes recommended by doctors and when taking them can make sense. Electrocardiogram, EKG or ECG. Electrodes attached to the chest to provide information about your heartbeat. may be useful for people with symptoms of heart disease, such as chest pain, and possibly for those at risk of heart disease who are starting to exercise. Exercise stress test measures the heart's function while it's stressed by exercise or medication. May be useful when combined with an EKG or in people who have an abnormal EKG. Abdominal aortic aneurysm test. An ultrasound to look for ballooning in the body's main artery, which can be deadly if it bursts, may be useful for people with detectable lumps in the abdomen and men 65 to 75, especially those who ever smoked. Women 65 and older who ever smoked might consider it, though evidence for them is less certain. Peripheral artery disease tests. A comparison of the blood pressure in your arms with the pressure in your legs may be useful for people with cramping in their hips, thighs, or calves when walking or exercising. Carotid artery imaging. An ultrasound of the arteries on either side of your neck. Narrowing of those arteries increases stroke risk. May be useful for people who have had a stroke or mini stroke, transient ischemic attack, or TIA. CT angiography. A CT scan that produces a 3D image of the coronary arteries may be useful for people with chest pain and unclear results on an EKG and stress test. We don't have the time to read all of an article from Marilyn Marchioni for the Associated Press, but the title is Doctors Tie Zika Virus to Heart Problems in Some Adults. And the evidence so far is only in 8 people in Venezuela, not enough to prove a link. It's also too soon to know how often this might be happening. And the reason that they went looking for this is that, as they report in the International Journal of Cardiology, they describe heart problems that have been seen from other viruses spread by mosquitoes, such as West Nile, and ones that cause yellow fever, dengue fever, and chikungunya. So if you want to look for that article from the Associated Press, March 10th, 2017, it's titled Doctors Tie Zika Virus to Heart Problems in Some Adults. And I thank you for tuning in today to Sound Body. Stay well and come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.